Is this you? You're waiting for a traffic light to change and your heart races at the thought of all the time you're wasting going nowhere? Going through security at the airport, you want to scream at the first-time flyer who's just in front of you, who still has his shoes on because you know he's about to bring the whole system to a halt. At work, your boss is so much less competent than you are that at night you dream of various unsavory forms of overthrow. Well, what you need in these scenarios and several others that present themselves in modern life is a dose of patience, which, says Alan Locos, who thought about this a lot and has just published a book called Patience, is something that you can actually practice and develop and build. The benefit of this, well, a lot less impatience in your life, which Locos says translates into a lot less anger. And how much of that is there going around these days? We want to hear from you on this. If you do practice patience in your life, we would like to know how you got there. What incident turned you around, or what lesson did you learn that maybe the rest of us can learn something from? Our number is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. So if you practice patience, how'd you get there? What was the turning point for you? Alan Locos joins me now from our bureau in New York. Thanks for coming on, Alan.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So I just mentioned that anger is close to impatience, and the scenarios that I was just outlining, being in traffic or being in that security line at the airport or having a boss that drives you crazy and leaves you tied up in balls of anger. You know, maybe it doesn't feel good, but what's wrong with anger? It's actually an honest emotion, is it not?
Oh, definitely it is. And there's nothing wrong with anger. There's nothing wrong with impatience. The problem is, do we act when we're experiencing impatience? Do we act when we're experiencing anger? That's where the problems can arise. But the feelings of impatience and anger are perfectly normal, just as you said.
Well, you do write in the book that you call anger almost a form of insanity, which doesn't sound like it's necessarily all right.
Well, it's acting when we are angry that can really lead us into a lot of trouble. The key is to be in touch with what we are experiencing as early as possible. Let's say, as in the examples that you used, if we're stuck in traffic or our boss is acting in a way that's idiotic, we will experience the arising of impatience or anger. But if we can exercise patience just for a moment or two, we're much, much less likely to say or to do something that we're going to regret. That would be the part that's really insane.
So what is that experience of exercising patience? What does it feel like?
I think it's personal within each of us. We can learn what that's like by stopping and taking a moment to just become more aware of what is going on within us. Specifically the thoughts, feelings, and physical sensations that arise, and they're constantly arising one after another. They arise and they die away. When we cling to them, that's when trouble can begin. You know, your example about the boss who's not as competent as I am. If I begin to write my stories about I'm always in this situation, I'm always playing second fiddle to someone who doesn't know what they're doing, that's why I never get any place, that's why I'm not in a good relationship, that's why nobody likes me. All that's happening is that I had the experience of dissatisfaction with an aspect of my boss. All the rest of that I've made up. And that's where problems can arise.
Wow. So you're saying that we don't have to have the second and third and fourth layers of those reactions.
We don't have to have them, and we don't really want them. It's the bare experience, the experience of what I just simply call the arising of impatience or the arising of anger. They're feelings. And exactly as you said, they're absolutely normal. There's nothing wrong with the feelings themselves, except for the fact that impatience and anger don't usually feel very good. You know, happiness, love, compassion simply feel better. They have a more pleasant tone about them.
Can there not be an argument made that anger gets things done? Anger's a driver?
If anger becomes the motivation to act in a way that is both wise and compassionate, then yes. But the danger is, because anger can be very powerful, that we will go right past wisdom and compassion and act just simply on anger, which can mean revenge, getting even, that sort of thing. And that's not really going to be wise.
We've asked listeners to call in with their stories of I guess, learning patience. And where it comes from, what was that turning point? What was the moment, if it was indeed a moment and not a long process? Let's bring in Amy from Dearborn, Michigan. Hi, Amy. You're on Talk of the Nation. Hi.
I was at a funeral a couple of weeks ago, and I'm generally a very impatient person. And it translates the most when I'm with my children. And the impatience I feel at sometimes when they're not doing what I'm asking them to do. So I went to a funeral a couple of weeks ago, and somebody who spoke read a poem called The Dash. And The Dash is about there's a date from when you're born and the date when you die, and the dash in between is how we live our lives. And that, to me, is such a powerful thing. I'm getting choked up.
It's so interesting. So it was something you heard. It was a lesson imparted, really, really stuck with you.
And I don't want my dash to be all about impatience and anger with my kids.
Can I ask why that's hitting you so hard, Amy?
Because I'm still struggling with it.
Yeah.
It's difficult for me. I kind of blame it on, you know, astrology a little bit, my signs and things like that, which is another conversation. But I feel that I'm a very imperfect person, and it comes out the most in a stressful situation with my kids.
Yeah. Alan, what do you hear in this?
Well, Amy and so many of the rest of us have a tendency to categorize ourselves this way and say, I'm an impatient person. A statement like that is always going to be inaccurate because, as science has now proven, we are constantly changing. So, you know, Amy, if we say, to this point, I've experienced a lot of impatience, that could be accurate. But this it just sounds like you've come to a moment of awakening, of realization, and wanting to do something about that. And that can change everything. And our children are great teachers because they're going to bring out our impatience. The job of parenting is a difficult job.
I have an email, actually, from a listener named Patience who writes two sentences to us, Alan. She writes, small children teach patience. They are never hurried. I don't know if they're never hurried, but...
Well, I've seen a pillow that was embroidered with the words, it says, insanity is inherited. We get it from our children.
Amy, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. We're going to bring in Amy in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Tara in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hi, Tara. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just thought of a particular lesson in which I learned the value of patience, and that was in middle school when I was being bullied by a particular girl and I was engaging with her and retaliating against her, and I realized that in doing that, I was just continuing to give her the power that she wanted in the first place. And so that's where I really learned my lesson of patience, that if you give in, that you're really letting someone else control your emotions, and I'm a control freak, yes, but I don't want someone else to control my emotions in that way.
So interesting that you're a control freak but don't want that kind of control. And so you found patience as the solution. I think, Alan, that's almost exactly what you were talking about before.
I think it is. And I think this realization that Tara had is a way of saying that she realizes that she is the only one who can give up her inner peace. No one else
Absolutely.
Can take that from her.
All right, Tara, thanks very much for your call, and we're going to go now to Chris in Naugatuck, Connecticut. Hi, Chris. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I moved to Seattle out of college, and I went to school at UConn in Connecticut, and I moved out to Seattle after graduation. And the first time that I actually had, like, a real interaction from somebody who lived in Seattle was at the supermarket. When I checked out, the cashier said, thank you, have a nice day. And it took me aback because I wasn't used to people being nice and taking their time to say something pleasant.
Interesting. So it sounds as though, Alan, maybe what Chris is saying is that we can pay it forward a little bit?
Absolutely. It's amazing what just a kind word or a smile does. you know, we just need to realize what it does for us if someone just looks back and holds the door for us for a moment, or just says, hi, how are you doing? That just can change our outlook for the entire day. It's so great to offer that and to receive that.
Thank you, Chris. Well,
absolutely. I mean, there are other points. I lived there for about 7 years, and there was a study that was done that someone told me about that if you're in a line of traffic in New York, it takes exactly 0 seconds for when the light turns green that people are going to start beeping. In Seattle, it takes 10 seconds, and in rural Oregon, it takes they don't beep.
Thanks very much for your call, Chris. We want to go to Alan in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Alan. You're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
It's a pleasure. Alan, you're on with Alan.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm almost 30 now, and I developed this anger, just impatience and anger, probably in my mid-20s that I've never had before. And I found myself doing things that I would never do before or saying things that were totally irrational and things that I would regret later. And the way I'm coping with it now, which I don't like it at all because it's totally not me, is I think about how my father and how my brother would react and how they would handle the situation because they're very patient people. And when I stop and I think clearly on what they would do in the situation, I act out, better responses to the situation.
You mean by learning from them as a negative lesson, and I'm not going to do what they did?
Right, exactly. How would they act in the situation?
Well, let me ask Alan Locus this question about family. Is family sort of a built-in, since we know members of our family, generally speaking, very, very well, and patterns are very, very deeply laid down, are families a difficult area, particularly where patience comes in, or is it a safe place?
Well, my research that I did before writing this book certainly shows that families are tricky areas for most of us. We speak about our buttons being pushed. Well, it's our families who installed those buttons. So, yes, that can be problematic areas.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'd like to share an email with you, Alan Locus, from a viewer who's does not actually give his or her name, but writes this. In 1997, at 35, I was diagnosed with a tumor, which was benign. After surgery and physical therapy, I realized that life is too important to be rushed. What about these big life-changing moments? Do they play a role often?
When our eyes to what's important, the loss of a loved one, the diagnosis of a serious illness, or in the case of the person who wrote the email, fortunately, a diagnosis that was not serious. But these can open our eyes. They can be those big moments where suddenly we say, hey, what am I doing? I'm just wasting a life that's precious. Let me re-examine. I think those things are very big moments.
An emailer named Dale writes, I have recently begun practicing patience after I just went through a rehab program. I do simple things like choosing the longest line at the supermarket or staying behind a driver doing the speed limit on the highway. The turning point was accepting the fact that I have absolutely no control over the actions of others, only my responses to them. Taking myself out of an angry situation, even if only mentally for a moment, and putting myself in the other person's shoes gives me a much better perspective. Patience is like a muscle, though. It gets stronger through practice, but at least right now, mine is not the strongest. Thanks, Dale. Alan, your response to Dale?
Well, Dale is showing considerable wisdom. I love his exercises of getting behind the slower driver, etc. Patience is not usually the word that comes to mind first when something is provoking our impatience and causing it to arise. So this type of exercise can be great. In the book that I wrote called Patience, I lay out a whole list of exercises that are very, very easy to do that you don't need patience to do, but you practice them using the word patience. Usually that's all we need is to just have something in the mind say, oh, patience, and that's it.
Mary Beth, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
I was having a very busy day with lots of errands a few years ago and went into a post office where I was the only customer, and the attendant was taking his time rhythmically stamping a very tall pile of envelopes. And he didn't even look at me. I stood there for about 5 minutes, and finally I just laid into him. At which point he looked at me and he said, "Ma'am, that is the prettiest blouse." He completely disarmed me. And I thought, what a great tool to have in your toolbox when somebody is impatient, to be able to use something like that that completely changes the subject and gets them to see how unimportant this little delay is
so,
in your scheme of things.
So Mary Beth, how do you bring that into your life so that it's not always the other guy who has to say the nice thing?
Well, I try very hard to remember that fellow and try to exemplify that, but I always fall short. I mean, I think we all do. It helps, though, to use humor, and I think humor is a very powerful tool.
Thanks very much for your call, Mary Beth. And Alan Locus, I want to ask you one more thing. The issue of aging relates to patients you talk about in the book. We only have about 40 seconds or so left, but what do you mean by being patient about being older?
Well, the body is changing, and we look in the mirror and we realize one day, oh, the muscle tone is not what it was. And sometimes we can become very angry at our own body, impatient with ourselves. And I think it's very important to realize that is the nature of the body. Everything is changing. The body is changing. So why not go with that so that we don't go to the finish line just resisting and unhappy, but going with what is natural order instead?
Alan Locus, I want to thank you so much for taking this time with us and for letting us all learn a little bit about patience in 20 minutes.
Alan Locus
is a Buddhist teacher and author of Patience, The Art of Peaceful Living. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow, it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday for a conversation with ClimateGate scientist Michael Mann on life in the crosshairs of the climate wars. And I will be back here on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm John Donvan in Washington.